Welcome to the Predictable Revenue Podcast, where frontline sales leaders teach you how to build and scale an outbound sales team. Welcome back to the Predictable Revenue Podcast. I'm your host, Colin Stewart. Today, I'm joined by Nishant Khanna. He's the co-founder at DemandRoll. They're a full-service marketing agency that do a little bit of outbound on the side. And today, we're going to talk about what he's learned about outbound, coming from the dark side of, as a demand gen marketer. Nishant, welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me, Colin.
And I'll try and keep my marketing people are useless barbs to a very minimum, but you know.
Perfect.
It's built in. So talk to me a bit about your background. You're not the typical sort of guest we have on the show, but you and I have had a few conversations and I feel like I've learned a lot. And I thought, hey, you know, if I learned a bunch from you, then we should definitely get you on the show so that everybody else can. So tell me about your background and how you got into doing a little bit outbound on the side.
Sure. So, you know, right now, like you mentioned, you know, I'm co-founder of DemandRoll. It's a full service marketing agency. But prior to that, so I've been doing startups my whole life. We've started 6 startups, all profitable. 2 of them were acquired. And we, you know, once we sold the last one, we were kind of thinking about like, do we start the 7th one? Because there is a lot of ups and downs in the startup phase. And we were like, you know what, wait a second. We have all this marketing knowledge and, you know, pitfalls and stuff that works, stuff that doesn't work from the previous 6. Why don't we compile all that and help companies who are kind of, you know, either just stuck or just really want to bump up their growth and, you know, help, you know, take that playbook and help them grow instead. So that's how DemandRoll kind of came about.
So how did you get into doing a little bit of outbound then if you're this sort of full service marketing agency?
Sure. So outbound, I think it's always, it's a part of life. Because for pretty much any startup, unless you're B2C, if you're any sort of like B2B space, even if all your leads are coming in inbound, at some point you have to do some sort of outbound. Even if it's, you know, not cold calling, if it's warm leads, you got to know how to sell on the call when you get on. So I think like regardless of, you know, outbound is pretty much, to me, outbound is like an overarching term, which can mean a lot of things. It can mean sales calls, just doing demos and all that kind of stuff. You know, for me, it encompasses all that kind of stuff, right? And you just can't go around it. You have to know how to sell on the phone.
For sure. And to me, it's not just about the phone. I feel like I learned, I mean, obviously you've got the email marketing background. I feel like I learned a lot about about email from you. And so those are some of the pieces that I'm going to try and pull out of you through this interview. And so if you're listening and thinking, why does Colin have this marketer on? That's sort of the direction as I feel like I learned some really cool things from Nishant and I want him to share. So I do want to sort of touch on the sort of barb I was throwing at you about marketers not doing anything. Cause obviously I don't believe that we sort of, our team, we roll up under the we call it the revenue team and sales and marketing sort of roll up under the same, you know, sit in the same floor, work on the same goals. I'm curious because people have heard my story. What are some ways that you've seen sales and marketing teams work together?
So what I would say is like the best way I've seen, you know, at companies that where the sales teams and the marketing teams work perfectly aligned is when from the get-go, you get everyone on the same page. And in terms of that, you really want to get the entire both departments in a room where everyone discusses, okay, you know, what are the KPIs that you guys are looking at? Here are the, you know, what's marketing KPIs? What's the sales KPIs? And, you know, both sides completely understand who your target audience is, what a qualified lead look like, and what the pain points for everyone is, right? Because like as a salesperson, if I know what Sharon in marketing, like what her pain points are, I can help her with some stuff that, you know, that I might have access to, or things that, you know, I can do on the sales side to make her job easier and like kind of vice versa. So I think like the companies that really do this well is where sales and marketing are kind of combined. Because for marketing, you know, if the KPIs are just driving traffic and getting leads in, but the leads aren't end up being qualified, you know, then it sort of becomes like, oh, I'm getting leads in, but sales isn't converting them. And vice versa, sales like, you know, the leads you're giving me are crap. So you kind of need to get everyone on board in terms of the KPIs, what our audience looks like, and what a great prospect looks like.
And what's the impact that you've seen that have on teams? Like what, why should we care?
Basically? Massive. Because for example, like as a marketer, I can, you know, for one of my clients, I can create a blog post or, you know, really long form content, which is 100 cute cat photos, right? It's going to get tons of traffic. It's going to get shit tons of traffic. How many leads? Probably zero, but you know, along the same line. So, you know, traffic doesn't always equate to good leads. At the same time, you can put out content as a marketer that can get leads. You know, let's say you're putting out something that's slightly relevant, but not quite relevant in terms of what you're selling. So you'll get the leads in, but they won't be qualified for your product. So the kind of content you create on the marketing side really needs to be aligned what the salespeople are expecting and what, you know, what they're going to be able to sell.
So talk to me about that a little bit, because I think it's so common. As I'm listening to you, I can hear the salespeople on the other side being like, yeah, man, our marketing teams, they just put up those cat pictures. Like, the people that are coming from Facebook, and I just got a Gmail and a no phone number. And it, you know, so I can see the other side of it. So as somebody that sits on the marketing side, how do you make sure that you're building, like you're producing that kind of content that's gonna not gonna turn into the cat pics, but it's actually
right.
Qualified.
So I guess you know, if you're starting from ground zero, it's a slightly different approach than if you already have both teams already operational, you have some customers, you have some content out there, then the approach is slightly different. But let's say if you're starting from scratch, right? I think the marketing team needs to involve the sales team in terms of, you know, what keywords they're going to be targeting. And you sort of have to, like, you know, a keyword, even though it drives traffic, the intent of the user that comes in through Google might not be there. So you kind of have to delve yourself into a psychology kind of role and think about, you know, if I'm typing this keyword into Google, what is my intent behind that keyword? Am I only looking for information? Am I looking to a solution to a problem that I have? Or is it a mix of both? You know, so if you're starting from ground zero, you only want to target the long tail keywords that kind of really pinpoint someone who's like lower down the decision making process, where the person already has a problem, he's looking for a solution and he wants it now, right? Because that's going to bring in prospects, that's going to bring in leads that will convert, because those people are motivated to find a solution right now. Mm-hmm. If you're further along the cycle, you need a feedback loop. You know, I think marketing and sales team, they both always kind of, you know, sales teams need to constantly, you know, whether it's in your CRM or it could be just in an informal basis as well, where you're constantly communicating that these leads were awesome. This particular lead was the best one. This one, terrible. And you know what, that the way that helps the marketing side is they can go back and look at the content. Okay, so what about this particular piece of content brought in that, you know, all these bad leads that sales is telling me? And usually when you kind of like really take that feedback loop and delve in, you'll see it all comes back to the intent of the keywords. You know, it's you can guesstimate it for the most part. You can use an educated guess and you get better with experience the more often you do it. But end of the day, it comes down, like, that is really like the focal point of success or failure is the intent of the keywords you're targeting.
Gotcha. How do you, I know it can be difficult and maybe we don't have to go into the technical side of things. I think I'm just sort of more personally curious. How do you track from, you know, this particular keyword in this particular ad all the way through into Salesforce? Is that just a direct mapping using whatever you got?
There's a gazillion ways you can do it, right? From a logistical standpoint, you could, if you have engineers on the team, you could do it purely with Google Analytics, right? You can just send the event tracking, based on, you know, where the UTM URL variable is, like based on that, you can send that into your CRM, or you can use something like Segment or Zapier, right? In Segment, you can sort of Segment. I love Segment. No plug. I have no clue who those guys are, but you know, you basically send all your events into the single data warehouse. So rather than constantly switching between different tools and analytics and CRMs, you have all your data in one place, and you can send it wherever you want. And that way, you know, so if you have a lead come in and you track it in Segment. From Segment, you can send it to whatever CRM you're using, whether Salesforce, whether Zoho. Zoho is freaking terrible, but you know, like anything you want to use.
Yeah. And okay, so one last like marketing question, and this is just a discussion our marketing side of things, and our revenue side of have been having lately, which is like the last touch attribution versus multi-touch. And salespeople, I'm sorry if you're like, hey, this is boring, but I had a question. This guy seems like he knows what he's talking about, and so I thought I'd ask, when Like the ad could generate that first meet, that first initial interest at the top, but then it was sort of all of your content machine. You know, maybe you've got white papers, videos, maybe you retargeted them. Like how do you, what's your thoughts on sort of last touch versus multi-touch attribution?
Explain to me, what do you mean by last touch versus multi-touch?
So I think like when I think about last touch is like, so I think that the thing that we've struggled with in the past is the attributing, okay, this ad campaign generated this number of leads, because sometimes they go right from the ad to your contact form, but sometimes they don't. Sometimes they go over here and they play around with your, you know, on your YouTube page and they come back. And so it's like, I think, you know, there are tools that have, you know, we've got a couple of tools, but you don't get the full, like,
got it,
16 touch, you know, of all everything they've ever done. You sort of get like the last three.
That makes sense.
Yeah.
I guess it depends on the channel. So if you're, you know, YouTube is obviously going to be harder to track if you're driving traffic to a YouTube video from the get-go. But let's say if you're bringing them to a landing page, right? Like the absolute, you know, old school methodology, capture that email. Because once you capture that email, you can associate all your attribution to that email. So regardless if they drop off, if the cookie's not there on the computer, they're using a different browser or whatever, you know, by that email, if you already logged it once, where they initially came from. So, you know, attribution is always tough. It's gotten better over the years with a bunch of tools in the market nowadays, but it all depends on the channel. But in terms of like, what's the best way to do it? You want to make sure you capture that email with the least amount of friction. So you can track them back easily later on. Gotcha. Email still works. Email is the name of the game. And if you just stick to the, you know, shortest amount of fields possible on your core landing pages, you'll be good.
Right on. So I'll bring us back into the sales side of things, because I do appreciate answering that. Maybe I could have waited, but I was curious. So when we're talking about leads, you know, you've been talking about only generating sort of bottom of the funnel, you know, leads, like leads that are ready to convert or are qualified, right? Do you only just focus on sort of bottom of the funnel, or do you think there's value in, you know, generating leads that are higher up that maybe just convert to your newsletter, and then you can sort of work them through marketing automation till it's a point, you know, it's at a point where sales can jump in.
Right. So I think like my view on that is you kind of need to have all your bases covered, right? Because the people that usually come in from the top, whether it's ad or organic, they may or may not be, like, you don't know if they're ready for the buying cycle, right? They might have shown interest in that content piece that they came in from, but they might not be, in terms of timing, they just might not be ready to pull a gun in terms of buying your product. So I think you need to capture them on both sides, but the people that obviously come down, they're ready to buy, you want to start hitting them up in terms of the sales process. But I don't think there's a preference in terms of just like only focusing on the bottom of the funnel versus the top of the funnel. I think the whole thing's a cycle and a process. Some people are just not ready to buy, but you don't want to lose them. You already spent all this money on creating all this content, doing all these Facebook ads, doing all these Google ads. You want to slowly nurture them into the process, you know, into the stage where, whether it's timing, whether it's budget, until they're actually ready to buy.
Awesome. Cool. And then at what stage do you think sales takes over? Because like this is on the, you know, if they're top of the funnel, you don't want to be putting those into salespeople's inboxes and say, hey, these people aren't really interested. That's just going to be a big old waste of time, which has happened to me. So what's your, you know, how do you see the world there?
So I see it sort of as an, I'll give you the marketing side of the answer.
Yeah.
So I think if someone is already ready to buy, they're already going to fill out your form or just sign up depending on what your product is, whether it's a SaaS product or whatever. But let's say they're coming through a content piece and they sign up for, let's say, the email newsletter, right? Like my view of that is, when you're constantly sending them, you know, every week or every few number of days, some high value content that they get value from, every third email, you make it a sales email. So every third email, you're trying to nudge them into selling them your solution. You don't want to do it too often, because then it comes back, you know, you're going to get a lot of unsubscribes. But every third or fourth email, you have a straight up, you know, not a super hard, but straight up sell in one of your emails. And depending on how many times they, you know, if you're tracking links in those emails, you can sort of understand on from the analytics side, okay, this person has gotten two of those sales email. They've clicked links in both to kind of explore. They kind of prime for a cold call, well, a warm call. They kind of prime for sales to kind of take over that and kind of hit them.
Right on. Cool. So you're just looking at the engagement, much like probably a lot of the sales development reps here are watching their sales loft, watching their outreach for people that are super engaged with their emails. They're clicking the links, they're opening, they're replying, maybe haven't converted yet. And that's how you're prioritizing who to go after.
Exactly. And I might be sort of a contrarian. I'm not really like a traditional salesperson. My view on sales is I like to just create relationships and sort of provide value and then sell them. Usually, you know, if you provide enough value in terms of the sales process, they sell you. They want to buy your product. You don't have to sell anything.
Right on. So speaking of providing value, talk to me about how you get people to respond to your emails.
So respond to my emails. You know, that's you opened up a can of worms because we can talk about this for the next 8 hours and we'll still only scratch the surface.
Let's do it. Buckle in, people.
So here's the thing. Everyone is on the email game, right? Every sales team sending out emails. And depending on the industry you're in, especially if you're in tech, you're getting 100, 200 emails a day. Just someone trying to cold email you on something, right? So how do you stand out? The whole question becomes if everyone's going one way, you have to go the other way, right? So if you open up your inbox, take a look at all your emails you got just today or yesterday. Everyone's like, hey, I saw you do this and this and this. We do XYZ. Let's gonna jump on a call next week. If everyone's getting that email, you know that people are so desensitized to it, your percentage of success rate is gonna be so low. And that's why, you know, the people, if, you know, a lot of salespeople I see, even friends that I know, they sort of read these blogs and, you know, then have email templates that work. And they pretty much just copy it verbatim or they modify a little bit. And they're like, man, email doesn't work because everyone else is sending the same shit. No one's like, everyone is so desensitized. So my view is you have to go completely against the grain, right? And so if we look at where the current grain is, everyone is trying to sell straight off. First email, everyone's coming on hard. Like, man, like, this is my product. This is what we do. Here's how you can benefit. Do you want to jump on the call? I don't know you, man. I don't want to jump on a call with you. So I think like what's missing in email these days is the relationship factor. Since people are so desensitized, I think like what works and what has been working for us and our clients is not selling on the first email. And it's tough as a salesperson, like, you know, it's ingrained in your mind, like sell, you know, always be selling. But when you go against the grain, you're like, oh man, is it a little extra effort? Hell yeah. It's, you know, you're spending more time creating relationships versus selling, you know, you're delayed selling. But when you sort of look at the long term view, you're going to get more sales and more money in the bank by creating those relationships slowly and then selling them. So what works for us is we create relationships by, you know, let's say if I the decision maker that I'm reaching out to, he's also a blogger. I read his piece and I email him my opinion of it. And I'm like, you know what, Steve, I read your blog. I loved it. By the way, here's what I think about, you know, some of the points that you mentioned in it. And the key goal for the first email is to elicit a response. Like, your goal is not to sell. Your goal is to elicit a response. So because what happens is the second someone sends you a response once, their barrier, psychological barrier to not being sold to has completely disappeared. So that in the future, after that first back and forth, when you try to talk to them, they're going to be way more open to hear what you have to say.
It's, what is it? It's Chialdini's, it's one of Chialdini's, you know, laws of persuasion, the consistency theory. Bias. Anyway, basically, once you've responded to one email, you're, you know, X percentage likely to respond to the second, and so on and so on and so on. So give me the inner salesperson to me is like, no, I've got to be selling. And obviously, you know, I've tried a bunch of different email tactics, but tell me, you know, can you give me some more examples of what, like how else you might open a soft, like a, what a soft open might look like? Because not every prospect of ours is going to write a blog.
For sure. So there's literally like a gazillion ways you can do it, but it's never like a one size fits all, right? Depends on your product, like what you're selling, who your decision makers are. Are they C-level execs? It's going to be a totally different approach than if you're reaching out to the social media manager, right? But here, some other things are, let's say if you have a social media product, right? And so, you know, find some of the larger social media events near you where these people are showing up, and then you show up there as well. Even if you don't meet them, you email them. Your first email when you come back to the list of all the attendees is of all your target decision makers is, hey, I missed you at the event. I saw you on the list. And, you know, so that way you need some sort of like hook where they're like, okay, there's some sort of quasi relationship here that even though this is not a close friend, there's some sort of hook where you can like get in with, right? So sort of like, so that's another one where, you know, I attended this event. Sorry, you know, didn't miss you, would love to talk to you about XYZ, or maybe meet you at the next event. In fact, Colin, you and I met at the LTV conference, and we used that same hook before. So I didn't email you because you're not one of our decision makers, but some of the other people, but a couple of the key people. So actually the problem was, I didn't even know you were attending because they didn't send out an attendee list until after the event. But a couple of the people that I wanted to reach out to, I emailed them before the event. Hey, it seems like we're both going to the LTV conference. We'll love to speak to you then. And this was just like a LinkedIn connection message because I wasn't connected to them. Mm-hmm. They accepted right away. Both of them responded right away. I met them when I met them on the event. They already know me. You know, it's so having any sort of hook, and as you have to adapt it based on your industry and your product and your the type of decision making you're going after, you need some sort of hook to get in for the first time.
Right on. So we've got kind of the softer open, which is more of a, you know, I found your blog post. We've got a sort of like a relevant event open. Hey, I missed you here. I'm just going to keep tapping you until you run out here. So can I tap you for some more secrets?
Yeah, here's another one. And I'm kind of cringing telling this because this is kind of our secret sauce here. Yes. Julia gave me the eye, like, because I guess it's already mentioned, so I have to go through with it. So actually, let me tell you about one of our clients first, like one of the strategies that they use. A lot of the marketing material that people put out, who does it come from? Probably the marketer, right? If it's a blog post or a white paper or whatever. Instead, try this out in your company. Instead, have it come from the salespeople. So, you know, maybe the salespeople don't have time to actually write the long form content or whatever you're creating, but have it ghostwritten for them. So, you know, if I'm writing a really awesome long form blog post, have the author of that blog post be my salesperson, the person who's going to be reaching out to people for that blog post. And so when they send out the prospects, when they come in, that particular salesperson as an individual is creating credibility for himself or herself. So, you know, that person is going to be a lot more likely to respond. He's like, oh, wait a minute. Colin wrote an amazing blog post. He sent me an email. You know, it's just like human nature. Like when you get value out from someone, you're more likely to respond, right? And here's sort of the tactic that we kind of use is, let's say we do sort of a roundup blog posts for some of our clients where I'll give one example can be top 50 marketers give their thoughts on X, right? And for that lead magnet blog post, we're going to email 50 of their most coveted prospects. And we're going to ask them for a quote and we're going to include them in the article. Who doesn't want free publicity, right? Almost the success rate on those kind of campaigns is insane. It's like usually over 90% where everyone's like, yeah, I'd love to offer you a quote and be featured on your blog. And then you write, you take their quote, you go a little back and forth. You can even jump on the call with them if you want to, you know, do like a phone interview. You write the blog post, you send them the link so they can promote it on their social, which people love to do. So you're getting, you know, Mac, you're getting the Malcolm Gladwell effect as well there. And then a week later, then you sell them. So this way you've created this really close relationship because you provided them so much value. You gave them free marketing. Mm-hmm. You put their photo and their quote on your blog. They published on their social. You published on your social. You're your best buds at that point.
That's awesome. And I can't remember if it was Influence or if it was one of Gladwell's books, but there was the study that they were looking at. Unless it was like MAD, Mothers Against Drunk Driving, and I might have the organization wrong, but they were campaigning and they were saying, hey, we want you to put this big giant sign in front of your house, and it was like an 8x4, like, don't drink and drive kind of thing. Obviously, yeah. Horrendous. And it was sponsored by I don't know. It was a psychological study, and they'd actually like properly spec'd everything out. But they tried that. They got like a 0.1%, like 1 out of 200 people, or 1,000 people sort of responded to it. And so they tried it again, but instead they first went to their house and said, hey, would you be willing to put a small sticker, which is like a few inches, in your front window? And then they came back to that same person 2 weeks later and said, and asked the same question. Hey, would you put this giant fucking sign? Their response rates were like 20%, their conversion rates were like 20%.
I love it.
They've already committed to helping in some way. And now it's like so much easier to, I think it's the consistency principle. I want to say I'm calling on Chialdini again.
Yeah, but 100%.
Sort of similar ideas. You've already built that relationship. They've already got used to helping you. It's like, hey, do you want to jump on another call and have a conversation about how we can help you? And it's the sort of reciprocity there where you've already done something for them. So they kind of feel like they might want to repay that. Sort of like you were helped. Like we were on that call a couple of weeks ago and you helped me a whole bunch. And I was like, I'm sitting here thinking like, how can I help you? I had this feeling. I'm like, all right, I think I can do is get you on the show. Maybe, you know, you find some people that are listening that need some full service marketing, and that's how I can return the favor. But it was just such a strong sort of emotional reaction.
110% agree with you. And, you know, it's like, here's the other thing as well. I think sales in general, like when you're giving out value as the first contact point, don't expect anything in return. Just think like you're just doing a good deed as a good human being, where you're just helping someone with no expectations, because I might sound like a hippie here, but the universe kind of works itself out. You know, it's like, if you're putting just great stuff out there, helping people, it'll come back.
Mm-hmm. Right on, man. It takes a while. It's a slow build for sure, but it does. Definitely does come around. So on emails, can we share any more? You got one more tactic for us? I can eke out of you.
Email. So actually, yeah. So I think, you know, here's a great one. So a lot of the time, actually, this is a trickle down effect. So this is kind of advertising, email, and cold calling, right? A lot of our clients that do cold calls and their conversion rates aren't, you know, up to industry standard. They're just not happy with it. Here's what we kind of do for them. We have a three-step process until you get to the cold calls. So it starts off with advertising, then email and cold emails, and then cold calls, warm calls. Whatever your prospect email list is, rather than cold emailing them right off the bat, create Facebook ads first. And you can, it's not just Facebook, you can actually use AdRoll as well, where you can just upload a list. So on Facebook, you can go in, upload your entire email list. So those, your ads will be only shown to people who match on that email list. So before you send them your first email, they have already seen one of your ads, right? It's kind of like the way Coca-Cola sells Coke. You don't just buy Coke when you know, just like, oh, I want a Coke. Yeah, you might. But most of the time, the way their methodology is multiple touch points. You see the billboard. You see the ad on TV. You hear it on the radio. You see someone drinking it. So those multiple touch points kind of lead you into buying something, right? So similarly, with email, your conversion rate is going to be higher if the person already knows your brand. Now, if you're a brand that's already well-known, let's say you're HubSpot, it's different. You know, people already know HubSpot. Mm-hmm. You're a new startup. You're an obscure brand where your particular prospects might not know your brand. You want to get your name out first before you send that first email. I mean, you still can, but if you want a higher converting email campaign, you create those ads, Facebook ads targeted towards your email list first. So they've seen the ads, then you email them. And once either they respond, well, if they respond, they're already, you know, down the funnel. But once they've opened a few of your emails and possibly clicked some of the links in your cold emails, mm-hmm. now's the time to call them up.
Gotcha. Okay, so many questions. First, where do you find their emails? Obviously, you've got their business accounts, right? But Facebook, most people don't sign up for Facebook with their work accounts. So the, I imagine matching up can be difficult.
It is. So, and this is exactly why we had to build the data out internally. So we tried a lot of providers. I won't mention the name. There's tons of them out there. Some are good, some not so good, some are okay. You know, the data industry just, for lack of a better word, kind of scummy. You know, there's a lot of providers out there. We were buying data for the last 15 years where the emails were just bad. You know, either the emails bounced or there were spam traps and our deliverability tanked. And it was one of the biggest pain points we had for so many years. And we were like, man, we just have to build it out ourselves. So we built this engine out over the span of 2.5 years, a lot of time went into that. Where we're constantly monitoring LinkedIn, Twitter, Facebook, Crunchbase, and a whole bunch of other places. And we compile our own database of decision makers. And we have about 600 million people in there. And we use some magic to figure out both their corporate emails and the personal emails.
Cool. Interesting. So if anybody's trying to do this, you just give Nishank a call and he'll hook you up with that database. Just for
in the world of GDPR, maybe not. but yeah, like, you know, we're more than happy to, you know, help people out. So it's like, yeah.
Cool. So any recommendations for, like, is there any tool that us pedestrians that don't have a 600 million contact database?
There's tons. It all depends on the industry, right? So some of these data providers are geared towards specific industries. Mm-hmm. I can't recall the name of one, but that one's only for fashion brands. There's discover.org, which is more focused on tech. So there's a lot of these providers that are, you definitely want to stay away from the ones which are generic. Because what I've seen from my experience is the generic ones, they're pretty much just, you know, either using a third-party API like Clearbit's API or Full Contacts API to just pull contacts on demand when you search for a specific type of domain name.
Yeah, they ping the mail server and try and validate it. And then they ping Full Contact and whatever.
Exactly. So you definitely want to use a data provider that is focused on a specific industry. Discover.org, I think it's pretty decent for just the tech sort of market. But even with Discover.org, or regardless of which provider it is, you do want to, again, verify your email list before you start using it. You'll be surprised, no matter the provider, even ours, when we actually put it through an email verification tool, because people churn out, right? People change jobs. So emails churn out a lot. So before you pull the gun on your email campaign, you do want to verify.
Gotcha. Who do you use to verify there?
We use quite a few, because we're just like a little OCD. We just want to make sure we don't have any bounces at all. So we use email list verifies one, and quite a few. There's one called Wohler Norbert. So there's a whole bunch, but those two are the key ones we use.
Oh, you use Norbert. We had their founder on, Sujin.
Sujin, yeah. I know. Yeah.
Can't remember what episode, but yeah, I met him at a conference. We were both speaking a year or two ago, and he's acquired a couple different list providers recently.
Yeah. He beat me the gun too, and I was actually looking at their prospectus on FE International to buy Wohler Norbert.
Oh yeah,
and yeah, Sujin kind of beat me to it.
Oh, that jerk!
Damn it, Sujin.
Yeah. Okay. Cool. So you found their email, you verified it. How much do you spend on these Facebook ads, AdRoll ads, to pre-warm them up?
Depends on the size of your list, right? Unless, and in 99.99999% of your cases, it's going to be super cheap. Because one, your list isn't going to be 50 million people. It's mm-hmm. going to be maybe, you know, a few thousand, or maybe at the most like a few hundred thousand. And not all of them are going to match on Facebook, right? Because like if you're, especially if you're only using the corporate emails, not everyone is using their corporate emails for their Facebook accounts. A lot of people use their personal emails. So the percentage of people which will match will probably be, you know, what we've seen is like 50 to 60% are going to match on Facebook. And when you actually do those ads, it's not that expensive, right? Because you can only, you can do either the CPC way of paying on Facebook or the impressions. And it's really not that expensive.
We're talking like, say we got a list of 2,000. I want to cover all my potential accounts. How much should I be spending a month just to sort of warm them up? $50, $500, $1,000,000?
It'll likely cost you less than $100 for a list that size.
Cool. Okay. And then, so I'm going to spend, call it $100 a month on ads just to keep my, like that's something that myself as an account exec that if I was in, you know, if I didn't have marketing support, I might consider doing myself just to get better conversions. I've done crazy things like that. And $100 is, you know, compared to a commission on a six-figure deal is nothing. Talk to me about the value here. How much higher converting are these, do you find these campaigns when you warm them up with ads first?
They definitely convert better. I would say it definitely varies from industry to industry. For B2C, we have one client that actually has worked really well for. It really depends on the product. It's hard to like pin down like on a very specific, like, you know, this is what's going to work for everyone, but it really depends on the industry. For the B2C company that we kind of work with, they sell to local, you know, plumbers, doctors, construction companies, truckers. And for them, this works extremely well because those kind of people, they get cold call all the time because their numbers on Yelp, you know, it's public.
Yeah.
So for those people to see the brand name before they get a salesperson calling them, it converts really well. I would say, you know, 2 to 3x better. But even for the B2B space, you have, if you try that out, you'll be surprised at the results.
Cool. And so let's see. So basically we're warming up, we're finding their emails, we're validating them, we're spending $100 a month on ads. And then we're letting that roll. We email them first. Once they open it a couple of times, then you cold call them. So it's not a pure cold call. It's sort of like it's sort of calling to warm, engaged, somewhat engaged prospect, basically.
Yeah, it's pretty much a warm call at that point. You know, it's not really a cold call.
Cool. So let me sort of change gears a little bit because we talked about sort of getting into like plumbers and electricians and things like that. What if, let's say, instead of 1,000 or 2,000 accounts, what if I just had, if I'm a named account rep, if I just have one account?
Then your strategy should be totally different. You know, it depends. So if it's, are we assuming that this named account is kind of a large enterprise?
Yeah.
Most likely, right?
You're not going to do that for a mom pop shop.
Yeah. Exactly. So if it's a large enterprise client, you know, a large enterprise prospect that you're going after, like my kind of viewpoint is it's the first step is figuring out what your decision-making chain kind of looks like. You want to identify three things for your prospect. One is who's going to be the end decision makers, you know, maker or makers. There might be more than one. And depending on the size of the company, this most likely is going to be more than one. Then you also want to make sure you know who's actually going to be using a product. Sometimes it's not the decision makers, right? Let's say if you're selling a social media tool, it's not going to be the CMO who's going to be using it. It's going to be the social media manager or whatever, right? So you want to know exactly who's going to be using your product once they buy it. And the third thing you want to make sure you know is who can you win over as an internal champion over at the company? It's probably someone who's going to be using your tool, right? So if you can figure out, if you can sort of shortlist two or three people over there who are going to be using your product, try to create a relationship with them first. Before you try to sell them, you want to know them personally, right? And you can use any of the tactics we were talking about before, either meet them at the event or, you know, send them a cold email totally unrelated to trying to sell them your product. You want to win them over as your internal champion, so that when you go in to actually sell them, you have an insider who's going to push your product through. right? And that converts so much better versus if you're trying to like, you know, you're like so desperate trying to sell the decision makers and, you know, someone else on the team might say, actually, hold on. I know this other tool, which is awesome. Mm-hmm. You want to be that other tool, which is awesome. So even if your competitors are trying to sell, you want an internal champion who loves your product before they've even bought it.
That's awesome. So it's so many people want to go top down because they don't want to get stuck with a lower level sort of buying influence. But you're saying quite the opposite. You're saying go after the users, find the build the business case there, win their favor, and then either get an intro up or ask them who it is and then go after them.
Yeah, I think the pros and cons of both approaches. Like the approach that I just outlined, it's definitely longer duration. Mm-hmm. We're spending more time building that relationship and stuff like that. But, you know, in my experience, any sort of sale that you make where you know the person, the retention on that client is going to be so much longer, right? Because mm-hmm. you're spending all this time trying to sell to people. You want to make sure they actually stick around. You know, that's why the clients that we get a demand role, I know for a fact in my heart, I have them for life. Until I just screw up majorly, you know, or they just go out of business, which they never will. So, you know, we'd rather spend time creating these friendships where these people are going to stick around forever.
Mm-hmm. I can confidently say that in, you know, when I was a territory rep and I only had a few very large accounts and the last role that I was in that was like this, I was basically working chemical plants. And basically for their shutdowns, essentially chemical plant has to shut down every year, and do maintenance and they do these scheduled shutdowns. They can be a couple of days, they can be a week. And I was the guy that would go in there and rent them all the diesel generators so they could provide power to the rest of things. Cause they're going, they're ripping in and ripping out electrical equipment. And I can tell you that I never lost a customer that had where I had like a name tag and a badge and I'd gone through their security training. Like I wasn't just a regular visitor. I could come and go as I pleased because I'd been there so much that everybody just knew me. It was like, I knew the security people, they knew me. I didn't have to sign in like a bunch of my competitors. So, you know, when all my competitors came a knocking, right. It was like, no, we've already invested so much in this relationship with Colin that, you know, why would I go through the hassle of, you know, I'm happy with them. And sure, you might have your price on this one widget or this, you know, diesel generator might be a little bit cheaper here or there. But, you know, at the end of the day, the switching costs are going to be huge because I've developed this relationship. Colin knows the plant. He knows how many units we need. He knows what it's going to take. If we have new people, he was there last year and his team will support us. And so I had a couple of really great accounts that just nobody else could get into because our company had owned that account for so long. And it was my boss had set it up and then he handed it off to me and we had all the plans and we at one point helped bring in one of the contractors that was doing that. And so we had all their equipment and all our equipment. And yeah, I can say that anytime I had one of those badges, it was very, very hard to lose a deal. And I think you're saying the very same thing is if you're selling to that user buyer, the more you get to know them, especially if you can meet them in person, the easier it is. And obviously not everybody listening to the podcast is going to have the luxury of getting on site with their customers. But, you know, if we're talking 6-7 figure deals, then, you know, maybe a flight's justified.
100% totally agree with you. And, you know, the kind of the psychological reasoning behind that is human beings love familiarity. You know, if I feel at home with something, you know, if I already know someone, regardless, even if that person's going to cost me more money than the alternate, I'm probably going to go with something that feels familiar.
Mm-hmm. That's fair. Nishank, I really appreciate all the advice here. I've got a couple more questions I want to get from you. So we're going to move to the lightning round. I got to find a better way, a more exciting way of saying that, but
no, it's pretty exciting as is. I love it.
Obviously I created the lightning round. This is something totally unique. Nobody's ever done a lightning round or anything before. So I'm going to hit you with a couple of questions and we're going to try and get them done in the next couple of minutes. And we're going to move to our last and final segment. I'm going to make you sweat a little bit, which will be fun.
Let's do it.
So what's your best subject line?
Introduction.
That's it?
That's it. Like nothing else, believe it or not. Introduction, just lowercase introduction, lowercase I. It, in terms of open rates, it really works. But here's the thing about email. And I need to put in a little disclaimer right there. The fact that we just discuss introduction works, don't use it because now everyone else is going to be using it, right? And both in terms of deliverability, you cannot overuse any single subject line, because if you're sending out, 300 emails a day consistently with the same subject line, you get labeled as a bulk sender at the ASPs and your deliverability goes down. Mm-hmm. But for every one-off email that you want to send out, it works really well. Because, it seems like, on the other, it seems like introduction means I might already know this person. Let me open this email.
Gotcha. So I think I'm going to go ahead and recommend the opposite and just say, all caps, this is a cold email, as the best subject line that's gonna work from here on out.
Interesting. I might try that out.
Yeah. We had Scott Barker from Outreach on, and he did something similar, but it was, when he couldn't get somebody on the phone, he basically would type up the transcript of him cold calling somebody and then email them that transcript. I thought,
interesting.
That's a hilarious and cheeky way of getting it done.
I love it. I love it. Actually, I have a funny story too. So this is a few years back, I think 6-7 years back. So my startup at the time, I was trying to sell to this large enterprise client, and we knew we weren't going to get him on as customer. I was trying to reach out to the CTO. And after endless calls and emails, I just wrote him an email where the subject line was, "I have your kids." He opened it up right away. I can see in the tracking, and he was opening up all the emails. So I know he was reading all the emails, and he responded to that one. He was like, "Ha ha, you got me. Now fuck off."
That's about all you can expect.
Yeah, pretty much. You want to make sure your subject lines are kind of relevant to what you're trying to sell.
911 code red emergency.
Pretty much. Yeah.
All right. So I know as a marketer, you're not doing a ton of cold calling, but how do you handle the brush off if you're cold calling somebody and they're like, no, not interested?
Single word, why? Why? And this is not even just for cold calls, even if it's in person or whatever. The word why is so powerful, because anytime is someone trying to brush you off, there's a reason why they're trying to brush you off. There's some sort of barrier or some sort of, thing that you need to get over, not them. And, but it's your job as a salesperson, as a marketer, to kind of break those barriers and delve in. So when you keep on asking why, so let's say if I'm on a cold call, even though I don't get on cold calls, and someone's not interested, I would be just why? Hmm. And they're they would have to explain themselves. And, if someone just asks you why, or hang up on you, but I have a feeling, a certain percentage of human beings might just try to give you an explanation why, right? And it's just a powerful question. Why? Colin, do you want more organic traffic? No, I don't want it. Why?
Because we're good.
Because I think it's hard to get. Why do you think is it hard to get? And then you slowly notch down. Think of it sort of everyone has a wound that they want fixed. So in terms of, problem and solution. But everyone has bandages on top of that wound. So when you keep on asking why, you're sort of undoing the bandage and exposing that wound so you can provide a solution to what the problem is. And we use that internally, not just for brush offs, but whenever we want to build a new product, we're like, why do we want to do this? And we go keep on asking why to figure out what the real problem is. What is the real pain point?
Love it. It's sort of you're either peeling back the onion, or it's the iceberg analogy. The no at the top is just the sort of tip of the iceberg, and you need to get to that.
That's exactly.
The majority of the content and the reasons are right at the, not just right below the surface. They go quite a few levels deeper.
Yeah. I like your analogy better of the onion rather than the open wound I was going with, but yeah.
Yeah. To each their own. Yeah. So what do you do when you need to push at the end of the quarter? So you're almost at goal, or maybe you're at goal and you've got some really great multipliers or some kickers, some bonuses that you want to hit. What do you do when you really want to kick it up a notch?
Two things. First thing is I would ask myself, why do I even need to push at the end of the quarter? What the hell was I doing the rest of the quarter that I need to do a push now all of a sudden, right? Because end of the day, consistency always wins over short bursts of whatever. So let's say you do end up in that spot, you do need to do that end of the quarter push. I would pick a small handful of prospects and then consolidate all my efforts into doing those handful of 5-10 prospects. versus, you know, just doing half-assed over a large list of prospects. Because when you get desperate at the end of the quarter, it's very easy to be like, oh, just let me just send out a million cold emails. Something might convert. But then nothing converts, you know, because it's just half-assed of effort, right? So I would just pick 10 prospects and hit them with every possible angle to get it.
Right on. I love it. I totally agree. The consistency is king, because if you made it to the end of the quarter and you're behind, well, chances are if your buying cycle is going to be, you know, is more than a couple of weeks, even more than a couple of days, you're probably SOL.
Yeah, exactly.
All right, man. It's been so great having you on the show. It wouldn't be a sales podcast unless we tortured you a little bit by giving yourself a chance to promote your business while making a marketer do a cold call. It's probably going to be one of my favorite ones, I think.
Whew.
All right, you ready? I'm going to do ring, ring, and you're going to try and convince me to take a meeting with you.
Okay, perfect.
All right, ring, ring. Hey, this is Colin.
Hey, Colin. This is Nishank from Demand Roll. Have I caught you at a bad time? By the way, that sounds terrible, like cold call. So
this is a very awkward cold call. Let's try again.
All right, let's start it again. Let's start it again from scratch.
Yeah, no second guessing yourself. Come on, just
go for it.
Give me the good stuff. All right, ring, ring. Hey, this is Colin.
Hey, Colin, this is Nishank from Demand Roll. Have I caught you at a bad time?
Yeah, it is a bad time, actually. I'm just walking into a meeting.
When would be a good time to call you?
Never.
Okay.
Oh, come on. Come on.
Now, here's the thing. I'm thinking about, like, I've never done cold calls before, you know? Like,
That's fair. So here, we'll do a little coaching. So I'm going to say, yes, it is a bad time. Good to go for it. Hey, you know, when can I call you again? What you can do is the sort of hand on the doorknob trick. So I say, hey, it's a bad time. But if you notice, I sort of paused, I left an opening for you. So where there's that gap, if they say, yes, it's a bad time, I'm heading into a meeting. And typically they're going to hang up on you, or they'll say, call me back at this point. But if they leave that little gap, they're probably not in a meeting. So you probably have 10 seconds. So what I'd say is, can you, like, what's one question that you can ask that's going to help sort of open this conversation? Okay. So think about that. I'll give you 10 seconds. One quick question. Are you happy with, are you satisfied with, do you have enough, you know, how mm-hmm. do you handle? Cool. You good?
Interesting. Yeah, let's do it.
All right. Ring, ring. Hey, this is Colin.
Hey, Colin. This is Nishank from Demand Roll. Do you have a second to talk?
No, I'm just walking into a meeting.
I have your kids in my basement.
It's come full circle.
No, the reason I'm calling is I wanted to find out if you're looking to grow your organic traffic.
Cool. Yes, let's just say. But I'm walking into a meeting. How do you help me grow our organic traffic?
So we've been actually helping other outbound sales agencies in Vancouver generate leads through organic search, and I thought you might be interested too. Actually, this is going to be a longer kind of process where I do want to really learn about your business. Is there a better time I can call you back?
There we go. That's awesome, man.
Yeah.
The one thing I would drop is just the purpose for my call, right?
Yeah.
There's a bunch of different things you can test with the opener. And obviously you're not going to go turn around and make 100 cold calls today. But I'm a big fan of, hey, this is Colin Stewart. If you're trying to get through the gatekeeper, or if you've got the person directly on the line, hey, it's Colin from Predictable Revenue, or it's Colin Stewart. I might've, you know, there's that trigger, that reason why I'm reaching out. So, hey, I noticed you're doing the X. I saw that you're Y. So I'd say, like, trigger. So this is the reason for my call. I saw you were doing this. Wanted to, and I had a question. Do you, you know, I noticed that your site, you know, you've got a really great brand, but your site's only, you know, Alexa rank 10 million, right? Like, you know, do you find that's affecting your traffic or something like that? It depends if you're calling VP sales, VP marketing.
Interesting.
All right. I'll get off my soapbox, and I want to say thank you for coming on the show. If people are wanting to get in touch with you, what's the best way?
You can just shoot me an email on nishank@demandroll.com, or just fill out the form on the site, or hit me up on LinkedIn. Yeah.
Awesome. That's pretty much it. We'll throw a link to your LinkedIn profile in the show notes if anybody's curious.
Sounds awesome. Thanks for having me.
Thanks so much for coming on the show, Nishank.
Thank you.
All right. See ya.
Bye-bye.